You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch. This is The Butterfly Effect, from a spark to a flame. Welcome to this episode of The Butterfly Effect. The Butterfly Effect is an idea that is commonly used in chaos theory. We are going to be discussing how a small change can make much bigger changes happen, and how one small incident can have a big impact on the future. A show about how a small change can have a much larger impact on our future. On today's episode of The Butterfly Effect, we are going to discuss the COVID-19 pandemic and its disparities, especially on the African American community. Say the word COVID, a lot of things may come to mind, especially depending on your background and how COVID affected you directly. Some words that may come to mind are death, essential workers, or even lighter words like binge watching, online school, or something we all experienced, quarantine. Even if you were lucky enough to not personally have gotten COVID, you definitely felt the shockwaves that COVID caused and will likely continue to feel the lasting effect of the coronavirus throughout the rest of your life. Your quarantine may have been filled with hours of scrolling through TikTok or hours of binge watching every show on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and all media platforms. Or maybe your quarantine was not really a quarantine at all. Maybe you're an essential worker and were forced to go to work for minimum wage every single day. Maybe you had to deal with anti-maskers in your face and people refusing to stay 6 feet away from you. Maybe you have family members who were on the front lines. Maybe they were doctors or nurses or people who worked in hospitals or clinics or settings like that. Maybe you had to quarantine far away from your parents and couldn't interact with them the day they got home because of fear of them transmitting the virus to you. As a kid, I always dreamed about being a doctor. I dressed up in the coats and wanted to do that when I was older. I even had the play stethoscope. However, I learned pretty quickly, whatever my talents are, that being a medical doctor was not one of them. I could not study medicine or deliver care to patients. And here I am, now in my freshman year of college, a communications major. However, I will always have a lifelong respect for doctors and nurses, especially after living through this COVID-19 pandemic. I have a lifelong respect for these doctors and nurses who are frontline workers and care for patients that are injured. Before COVID, I was unaware of how our healthcare system worked. As a child, I grew up hearing the phrase Obamacare. Obamacare this, Obamacare that, it's good, it's bad. Whether the things I heard were positive or negative, I consistently heard that term. I then heard that term again a lot during my adolescence, especially during the 2016 election, when former President Donald Trump's goal was to repeal Obamacare. However, I was extremely unaware of what our healthcare system was and how it worked. I always thought our healthcare was like a patient comes in with an issue, they go to the hospital, and they meet with a nurse, and they get their help, and they get sent on their way, now healthy and fine. Healthcare has been a huge issue in the United States of America for decades. It's been something that's constantly been debated in every presidential debate, and is something we deal with on a day-to-day basis. It also raises the question, who is responsible for providing healthcare to everyone? In 1994, the Health Insurance Association of America paid for a plethora of commercials to oppose Bill Clinton's healthcare reform proposal. I was not alive during these commercials, but the commercials that aired are known as Harry and Louise healthcare ads. The ads depict hardworking Americans discussing the trouble of government making medical costs much higher. This is genius. The ads use simple, easy-to-understand language that plays directly on the viewer's emotions. Also, by depicting hardworking average looking Americans and makes the commercial relatable to thousands and maybe even millions of Americans like them. The ad even has somber music playing in the background to set the mood, and the actors speak softly and have melancholy voices when discussing the awfulness of big government. The ad uses short, memorable phrases like, "Having choices we don't like is no choice at all." And the ad closes with, "They choose, we lose." The they being big government. They choose, we lose. That again is genius. It's a short tag to remind you how we do not want big government involved in making our choices. These ads may have been, it is a perfect example of misinformation. It created the stigma that Americans were going to lose private health insurance, when in reality, that's not what was going to happen. The truth is, during this time, many Americans had no private health insurance to lose. But if you weren't informed on this, you just assumed that big government was trying to take away yet another one of your rights. To create widespread panic and pushback of Bill Clinton's healthcare reform proposal, they created these commercials to spread fear. Before the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, about 47 million Americans had no health insurance at all. 47 million Americans had no health insurance at all. And today, nearly 20 million Americans do not have any health insurance at all. Today, 20 million Americans are not insured. Insurance companies are actually in charge of the care patients receive, not necessarily our government. Insurance companies have the power to restrict what is covered in particular health insurance plans. They also have the ability to flat out refuse those with pre-existing medical conditions. Let's just think about that, because that certainly confused me. Wouldn't people with pre-existing conditions need the coverage the most? The question only became more prominent during the COVID-19 pandemic. Those with pre-existing conditions are at higher risk of contracting COVID-19 and dying from the COVID-19 virus. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention website says, quote, "Adults of any age with certain underlying medical conditions are at increased risk for severe illness from the virus that causes COVID-19. Some of these conditions include cancer, chronic kidney disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, Down syndrome, heart conditions such as heart failure, coronary artery disease, or cardiomyopathy, immune compressant state, solid organ transplant, obesity, pregnancy, sickle cell diabetes, and type 2 diabetes. The idea of the importance of public health has been shredded to pieces and took a major backseat in funding. Just in the past decade, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's core budget has been essentially flat. State and public health spending has dropped by 16%, and health departments have dropped by nearly 18%. Nobody was really concerned. Things were fine. Life was good. Life expectancy was high. Until, dun dun dun, 2020 and the deadly virus COVID-19. There was no nationally coordinated response to the COVID-19 by President Trump's administration, and the states and locals were forced to play catch up. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, tragically, this week, the United States passed a total of 50,000 deaths since the start of the pandemic. Nationally, the number of COVID-19 deaths continued to fluctuate. As of February 24, 2021, a total of 503,587 COVID-19 deaths were reported. The current 7-day average of deaths is 2,047 deaths, a 23.8% decrease from the previous 7-day average of 2,687 daily deaths. over 500,000 total deaths. It raises the question, if we were more prepared and had a national coordinated response, would the outcome be different? After the break, we are going to be discussing how the COVID-19 has affected Black communities in particular. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Monarch, from A Spark to Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch. On today's episode, we have been discussing the American healthcare system and how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected it. Let us take a walk down memory lane. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I'm just kidding. Actually, about a year ago, right here in the United States of America, we lived a much different life. A life where we could go to concerts. A life where we would sit in lecture halls. All while being unmasked. Honestly, it's kind of crazy to think about how things have changed in just a year. And all the things we used to do before COVID. And if you think about it, some of it was kind of unsanitary. For example, when you would go to a makeup store like Sephora, they would have test tubes of lipstick that you could just test out or try on. Gross. Also, before COVID, I used to be a consistent traveler. Traveling is one of my favorite things to do along with my family. And I kind of cannot believe we used to fly on airplanes and go through airports without any sort of face covering. I mean, I know airplanes have super cleaning scrubber systems that supposedly circulate the air cleaner than before. But airports and airplanes are filled with random people and lots of germs. I honestly think after people are vaccinated, we will likely continue with some of the new protocols instituted because of COVID. Another interesting thing is how certain places are dealing with COVID. Like I said earlier, I used to travel all the time, and because of COVID, it's less easy to see other places and the way they are handling the pandemic and the certain COVID protocols. However, I live a long plane ride away from Dominican University of California, so I still have the opportunity to fly and be in airports every so often. In the South, COVID is taken, let's say, very differently. I was very surprised to come to Dominican University of California and see people wearing their masks outside, like whether they're running or walking their dog. In the South, people tend to not have a mask when walking in parking lots on their way into establishments, and there is a large group of anti-maskers. Where I am from, people only wear their mask inside of an establishment, if that. I've seen lots of people resist the COVID-19 protocols by refusing to wear their mask even in big establishments like grocery stores. I find this somewhat selfish. No one wants to wear a mask. Let's be honest, they're no fun, especially if you're wearing glasses, your glasses fog up, and they can sort of be uncomfortable. But everyone has a responsibility to do their part and slow down the spread of COVID-19 by wearing a face covering. But let's start at the beginning. The coronavirus disease was first reported in Wuhan, China, back in December 2019. At this time, many in the United States believed we would not be affected by the coronavirus. We thought, it probably won't even get here, and if it does, it won't even be that bad. Boy, were we wrong. I clearly remember that day in March. I remember sitting in my 7 a.m. AP statistics class, talking with the other girls at my table. I heard we might be getting a week off from school because of that virus thing. Oh man, I could use a break off. I'm so behind in my classes. Little did I know that Friday would be the last day of in-person school for quite a while. I also remember going to work after school that day and leaving stuff in my work locker, only for my job to be closed for the next couple of months. It's strange to think how everything changed on just a random day in March. We're getting the letter from the school district saying we would get an extra long spring break to take precautions for the COVID-19 pandemic. And I remember being pumped. I thought I was getting an extra long spring break. I remember staying up till 4 a.m. and waking up until 1 p.m. almost every day. After that extended spring break, our county school system then informed us it was extremely unlikely we were to return to in-person school for the rest of the school year. Oh, and graduation was kind of still up in the air, but they weren't making us any promises. I remember complaining a lot about the fact that I was being so-called robbed of my senior year. I remember complaining about not being able to see my friends, and I was complaining about all the predicaments COVID-19 had caused me. But little did I know, there was much worse going on. The coronavirus has caused many disparities to African Americans and the African American community. African Americans were extremely vulnerable during this global health crisis. Dr. Monica McLemore, who is the Associate Professor of Family Healthcare and Nursing at the University of California, San Francisco, says, "Medical ethics say you should save the people who are most likely to survive. Public health ethics say you should distribute resources based on need. Medical ethics and public health ethics is different and more equitable. The medical ethics reason may be why health insurance companies justify their reason for denying to cover those with pre-existing health conditions. But public health directly contradicts the statement. It says to help those who need the most, that would consist of insuring African Americans and making sure they have access to proper care." Even the Center for Disease Control and Prevention website says, quote, "Long-standing systematic health and social inequities have put many people from racial and ethnic minority groups at increased risk of getting sick and dying from COVID-19. The racial wealth gap has only widened during the COVID-19 pandemic, and as more and more people of color lose their jobs, the housing crisis is only getting worse as people are facing foreclosure or eviction. Educational inequity is being manifested. Schools with more students of color have fewer resources and more difficulty with transferring to online school." After the break, we are going to be discussing more in depth the inequities Black communities have faced during the coronavirus pandemic. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch, from A Spark to Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I am your host, DJ Monarch. Today's episode, we have been discussing the disparities of the coronavirus pandemic on African Americans and the African American community. Before the break, we were discussing some of the particular disparities that the coronavirus has caused. In particular, the African American community in Chicago, Illinois, has experienced severe disparities due to the coronavirus pandemic. In Gloria Olapito's article, "It's Like They're Waiting for Us to Die, Why COVID-19 is Battering Black Chicagoans," in The Guardian, she states, quote, "Despite only accounting for 30% of the city's population, Black people make up 60% of COVID cases there and have the highest mortality rate out of any racial or ethnic group." Okay. Black people only make up 30% of Chicago's population, yet over half of all the COVID cases in Chicago are black people. Most of the COVID cases in Chicago, Illinois are concentrated in majority black neighborhoods. This is a clear manifestation of structural racism hard at work. Black people and black communities have less access to proper testing and proper treatment for corona. These structural issues in our society raise the question, is being black a pre-existing condition? Can being black prevent you from getting proper healthcare and proper treatment? The article, It's Like They Waiting for Us to Die, Why COVID-19 is Battering Black Chicagoans, in The Guardian also states, quote, that black Chicagoans are more likely to work as cashiers, hospital support staff, and other jobs, and that increase their chance of getting or catching COVID. But even with the heightened risk facing residents, permanent testing sites are not widely available in predominantly black communities. So these black people are more likely to be working these types of high-risk jobs, but are not given access to proper testing? Huh? I'm so confused. Well, if you're just as confused as me, I have some more bad news. This issue is happening in more places than just Chicago, Illinois. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, death rates among black people between 55 and 64 years of age are higher than for white people aged 65 to 74, and death rates are higher for black aged 65 to 74 than for whites aged 75 to 84, and so on. In every age category, black people are dying from COVID at roughly the same rate as white people more than a decade older. These inequities and disparities are just some of the issues African Americans and African communities have faced during the coronavirus pandemic. Another major disparity the African American and African American communities have faced during the coronavirus pandemic has been unemployment. Jacoba Williams, an associate economist, says, quote, because of the pandemic, in April, black workers' unemployment rate was 16.17% compared to a rate of 14.2% for white workers. As businesses were allowed to reopen, unemployment rates among white workers began to fall quickly, dropping down below 10% in July. The picture was different for black workers, whose unemployment rate increased slightly between April and May and fell slowly in the following months. By August, the white unemployment rate was 7.3%. For black workers, it was 13%. Yes, the unemployment rate for African Americans workers did finally go down once businesses began to reopen, but there is still a large gap between white and black workers. 7.3 and 13, those are very different numbers. COVID-19 shockwaves has touched every aspect of our lives. After the break, we are going to be discussing more of the inequities black communities have faced during the coronavirus pandemic and how these disparities may affect vaccinations for African Americans and African American communities. You are listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM. Only at Dominican University of California. I'm your host, DJ Monarch, from A Spark to Flame. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this episode of The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. Once again, I'm your host, DJ Monarch. On today's episode, we have been discussing the racial disparities of the coronavirus pandemic. Okay, so I have talked a lot about the inequities and disparities COVID-19 has caused African Americans and the African American community. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We have now moved into the stage of vaccinations. Yay! But unfortunately, systematic racism plays a role here too. It affects who will get the vaccination first and a multitude of other factors. Coronavirus pandemic has manifested many cracks in the United States society and made the structural racism in our society even more apparent. We had previously discussed the United States healthcare system and how it clearly does not favor minorities, and it makes it difficult for minorities to get proper healthcare access. Some of the data I have previously talked about clearly shows the disproportionate impact of the coronavirus on African Americans and African American communities. I now have some more data for you. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, people of color are 3 times more likely to become infected with the coronavirus. People of color are 3 times more likely to become infected with the coronavirus. 3 times more likely. Also, according to the Health and Human Rights Journal, quote, Black people with the virus die at nearly 2.5 times the rate of white people. Black people with the virus die at nearly 2.5 times the rate of white people. 2.5 times the rate. These numbers are shocking and horrifying. This data clearly proves the effect the coronavirus has had on African Americans and the African American community. Quote, racial and ethnic communities living in segregated neighborhoods often lack accessible and good quality health care. Also suffer from considerably higher rates of poverty, poor quality, and often crowded housing conditions. Greater exposure to toxic pollutants in their air and water, and lack of availability to healthy foods. In addition, they have fewer quality educational opportunities and less well-paid employment. These social determinants, in turn, create conditions which leave people of color more susceptible to chronic disease, including asthma, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, and obesity, that make these populations more vulnerable to COVID-19. So if numbers were not getting the point across that African Americans and African American communities were more likely to get COVID, this information explaining the inequity and the other disparities African Americans face also prove why they are more likely to get COVID-19. And not just more likely, 3 times more likely to get coronavirus. The United States system of discrimination, inequality, and lack of distribution of resources causes this domino effect of disparities throughout these communities. We also previously talked about how in Chicago, most African Americans worked high-risk jobs. I'll remind you, the article, It's Like They're Waiting for Us to Die, Why COVID-19 is Battering Black Chicagoans, in The Guardian, quote, Black Chicagoans are more likely to work as cashiers, hospital support staff, and in other jobs that increase their chance of catching COVID. But even with the heightened risk facing residents, permanent testing sites are not widely available in predominantly Black communities. And as I said earlier, that this is not just an issue Black Chicagoans are facing. African Americans and other minorities are overwhelmingly workers in jobs that are considered essential. Okay, just so we are clear, essential jobs are jobs that are essential to keeping the economy functional. These essential jobs are jobs that cannot be done via Zoom, online, or be done at home. Okay, so now that we have a clear understanding of what is considered an essential job, let me give you some examples of essential jobs stated by Health and Human Rights Journal. Quote, agricultural workers, processors in meatpacking plants, and home health workers. These are all jobs where it is very, very common to work closely with others, and it makes it nearly impossible to practice the 6 feet social distancing protocol that has been in place for almost a year now. These jobs are also usually low-paying jobs with either little or no sick leave at all, which is requiring people to go to work even when they're sick. Okay, and I get you might be thinking, well, if you're sick, just don't go to work. It's not that easy. They do not get guaranteed paid sick leave. So if they don't go to work, they don't get paid. And for most workers in these kinds of jobs, not being paid can be the difference between life or death. The coronavirus pandemic has taught us some very tough lessons. We've learned about the lack of payment in dangerous environments essential workers are required to work in. We've learned about the inequalities in our school system and the systematic racism through it all. So now we move on to the questions of vaccines. So a couple questions that I have is, so now that we have a vaccine, is this the first step to get us and the Black communities back on track? Well, maybe. However, the vaccine will not be a cure for the public health crisis and all of the inequality in our country. But yes, I would say the first step is getting people vaccinated. However, there's definitely some skepticism of the vaccine and that the Black community is not really open and ready for this vaccine. I remember when COVID first came to America, there was even this idea that Black people could not get COVID because of the melanin in their skin. I know, that seems crazy now, especially after all of the data I've given you to show it's actually the complete opposite. But I think it's important to understand that when the pandemic started, there was a lot of misinformation. There was even a time where they told us not to wear masks. Also, the fact that there was no regulations from the federal government, and rather it be a state by state decision, there was a plethora of different things going on in every state. Some states closed down basically immediately, while others never really shut down. So for African Americans, it's especially difficult to know if the information we are receiving is accurate and true. According to the Health and Human Rights Journal, it is extremely important to have data to show the effectiveness of the vaccine in groups mostly impacted by the coronavirus. That means African Americans and other minorities, which means their participation is needed in clinical trials of the vaccine. But like I said, African Americans and the African American community is very skeptical of this, so they were definitely not first in line to be the quote, guinea pigs of the coronavirus vaccine. Also, the effort to get African Americans to be a part of the clinical trials were inadequate for a multitude of reasons, one of them being the extra cost minorities usually receive when participating in these trials, but also the skepticism of African Americans, rightfully so. Past abuse and neglect have made African Americans quite reluctant to be a part of these types of clinical trials. In the short video presentation, Voices from the Barbershop depicts everyday men at the barbershop answering simple questions about their hesitation with the coronavirus vaccine. This video was quite fascinating. In the video, men are going in to get their hair cut. Then their barber asks them, "Would you get the coronavirus shot?" Many of the men have scrunched up faces and furrowed brows while they think about their response to this question they've just been asked. The video was created to inform public health officials about the African American community's skepticism of the coronavirus vaccine. One of the men in the video says, quote, "I don't feel as though it's safe. I'm saying, we don't know if the medical administrators are telling us the truth about this thing. I mean, who knows what's in this thing?" His response was similar to many others in the video. Another man simply said, "I'm not doing it." Some even shared their fears that they may not be getting the vaccine that will save them. They thought they may be administered another vaccine that is not doing quite the same thing. Many African Americans are afraid they will be tricked or bamboozled by the system once again. The United States doesn't have the best track record. This country has a history of misleading and misinforming African Americans, especially when it comes to healthcare. For example, the Tuskegee Syphilis Study. In the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, African American men with syphilis were promised proper treatment for their syphilis. However, they did not receive it. Many of the men in the study either died or faced other serious health issues. For those who were willing to get the coronavirus vaccine, they said, quote, "I've got to see how it affects others first." So they were willing to get the coronavirus vaccine, but not go first. It goes to show you that it is very difficult to trust a system that has consistently failed you. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, it's February 1st statistics, which draws from 23 states, Black and Hispanic people have received disproportionately fewer vaccine doses. In 20 of the states, the percentage of Black people who received COVID vaccines is half or less than the portion of Black COVID cases. Some of the greatest gaps were seen in the following states: Delaware, which was 6% of vaccines received versus 24% of infections; Louisiana, which was 13 versus 34%; Maine, 1% versus 6%; Mississippi, 17% versus 38%; and Pennsylvania, which was 3% versus 14%. White people, on the other hand, had a significantly higher number of vaccinated people than cases percentages in all states, but Alaska, 28% versus 30%, and Nebraska, 88% versus 89%. So I just threw a whole lot of numbers at you, so let me break it down a little bit. African Americans have one of the lowest rates of vaccinations among any ethnic group. White Americans are being vaccinated at a rate about 3 times higher than Black Americans. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, those who have received at least the first dose of a vaccine is 5.4% are Black, while 60% are white. This is quite interesting. Didn't we realize Black people are 3 times more likely to become infected with the coronavirus? Didn't we also learn Black people with the virus die at nearly 2.5 times the rate of white people? Didn't we also learn Black people are overwhelmingly the workers in jobs that are considered essential, which are high risk for contracting the coronavirus? Yet none of this data seems to matter. Wouldn't these numbers be the first thing that you would take into consideration before vaccinating people and when distributing the vaccines? Well, apparently not. This is quite frustrating. There is numerical evidence and plenty of data to clearly show the systematic failure, yet nothing is being done about it. Dr. Oney Blackstock, a primary care and HIV physician, urges for the age cut to be lower for Black people. Her reasoning for this is due to the fact that Black people are 3 times more likely to become infected with the coronavirus. And the fact that Black people with the virus die nearly 2.5 times the rate of white people. And the fact that Black people are dying at similar rates to those of white people who are 10 years older than them. Quote, these fixed age cutoffs that most states implemented did not take into account structural racism's toll on Black life expectancy, in addition to the impact of the pandemic on life and life expectancy of Black people in this country. Even after we get vaccinated, we will continue to feel the effects of the coronavirus pandemic. The pandemic has manifested more of the inequity and systematic racism there is in the United States. The inequity in our country has caused a multitude of disparities for African Americans and the African American community. Thank you for joining us on today's episode of The Butterfly Effect. You have been listening to The Butterfly Effect on Penguin Radio, 102.3 FM, only at Dominican University of California. I am your host, DJ Monarch. This is The Butterfly Effect, from a spark to a flame. Please join us for next week's episode of The Butterfly Effect.